Rave Radio. Greetings and salutations, fellow AV Insider listeners abroad. This is your host, as always, Johnny Moda of AV Insider. As I've previously mentioned, if you've been listening to the show, you've probably learned some things. You probably taught me some things. And today, we are going to learn about wireless speaker technology and wireless audio with the president of the WiSA Association. But before I bring him on, as always, I'd like to thank my sponsors. They keep the lights on in my little room up here in Northern California, where it's currently a bit cold, but not too bad. Ingram Micro. They are the world's largest technology distributor, delivering flexible multi-channel supply chain solutions and more. If you head over to ingrammicro.com, you can check out some of the products they offer to you. And as I mentioned, if you've been listening to the show, you probably learned some of our guests are part of Ingram Micro's distributions. One of them, my previous guest, would have been Ankyo. And as I mentioned, I have the president of the WiSA Association, Tom Lee. Tom, thank you for taking part today from CES in Vegas. I know how that's going.
I'm here with, I've heard that there are almost 200,000 people at the show this year, but yeah, thanks for having me on.
The only suggestion I have for you, if you haven't done so already, is some comfortable shoes and lots of hand sanitizer.
Very comfortable. And bring a lot of money with you, because it's the land of $12 waffles and...
Oh man, yeah, it's been a minute since I've been there, and... Yeah, everything's expensive. I can't do too well in the desert, man.
Unbelievable.
A couple days of the show and I'm ready to come home.
Yeah, that and a 2-hour cab line. Other than that, it's fine.
Yeah, no big deal. You just walk the strip if you can. As I mentioned, you are at CES today. We're in Vegas. Tell me a little bit. I think we should start with the WiSA Association in general. What is the WiSA Association and what does that mean for consumers?
So WiSA stands for Wireless Speaker and Audio Association, and we were founded in 2011. We're now about 36 companies, and what we're doing is we're developing a standard for high-resolution wireless digital audio. Now, originally, the design center was really the home theater market, but it's now really both home theater and multiple zones around the house, and unlike a lot of the other technologies that are out there today, what we're trying to do is a fully seamlessly interoperable standard, so that you can take products, a transmitter product from one company, speakers from two or three other companies, take them out of the box, plug them in, they pair, and they all work together. And it's really different than I think what's going on with non-WiSA companies, which tend to be proprietary, closed standards.
Right, you know, buy our product across the board, basically.
Exactly. I mean, you can buy a fill-in-the-blank Wi-Fi audio system, and when you want to expand, you have to buy that product from that same company.
Right.
So there are really two things. One is this seamless interoperability. The other thing is that because the design center for this product is really more in the home theater realm as opposed to the room audio side, it brings a whole bunch of new technical things that you have to solve, things like low latency and determinism and lots of technical stuff so that you stay in sync with the video picture. And so instead of a stereo, you're looking at 8 channels. Instead of 48K, you're looking at 96K. Instead of 16 bits, it's 24 bits. The technology is very, very different, and it's aimed really at high-resolution audiophile level quality.
Now, before we talk about some of the brands that are the WiSA members or part mm-hmm. of the association and brands mm-hmm. and such, you mentioned, you know, like syncing audio with video, and in terms of wireless, that's huge because I imagine, you know, unless short of being hardwired, there's got to be some sort, you know, on a minute level or even a large level. I don't know. Maybe it depends on other brands, or if a WiSA member means that you guys have this certain standard that some sort of audio latency or delay is mm-hmm. involved, correct? There's got to be some sort of delay, correct?
Right. And depending on how much delay there is, you stay in lip sync, and that's really important. And so when somebody joins WiSA, they get this a specification on how they have to implement their product. And there's some technology that was originally developed by a company by the name of Summit Semiconductor out of Portland. And this technology really defines sort of the underlying wireless protocols on how to do this. And you're right, it has to, if you're over about 20 milliseconds of delay or latency, you get out of lip sync and it starts to look like a dubbed monster movie from Japan in the 60s. And so what this technology does is it keeps the latency down to 2.6 milliseconds. And then the other aspect of this timing that's important is something that's called determinism, which means consistency. In other words, it's 2.6 milliseconds every single time. So every packet arrives 2.6 milliseconds later. And that enables you to stay in perfect lip sync with video.
So am I correct in saying that WiSA has developed a wireless audio standard for these partners of the WiSA Association to meet so that way that they all sync up with that
right.
minimal
That's
latency?
Right.
Okay.
That's right. And the other thing is you see a lot of the systems from people like Sonos and D&M has a technology called EOS.
Yeah.
There's another one that's called AllPlay from DTS. There are lots of these things out there. They all run over Wi-Fi. But the issue is that Wi-Fi is getting to be pretty crowded. And the 2.4 gigahertz band is pretty much completely full. There's no way that you can get the amount of data required to do home theater 8 channels over 2.4 gigahertz. So people say, well, why don't you just use 5 gigahertz? Well, the 5 gigahertz band is getting just as crowded. And so what we're able to do with this technology is take advantage of something called the uniband. And it's up in the 5 gigahertz range. It's public radio spectrum. And in fact, the lower 4 channels of this part of the radio spectrum is used by Wi-Fi at 5 gigahertz. And at the other extreme of this band, 5 channels are used. But there are 15 channels that are unused by Wi-Fi. And so this new standard that WiSA has developed utilizes these 15 channels in addition to the 4 at the low end and 5 at the high end in order to ship around 31 megabits a second around in this deterministic way with very, very low latency. And we need that in order to get the 8 channels. One thing that a lot of people don't realize is these home audio or the multi-room audio systems are stereo. And stereo just doesn't hack it for home theater. You need a 7.1 kind of system. And this is the technology that delivers that. In fact, it's the only technology that's currently available that gives you not only 8 channels, but it gives it to you with 24 bits, 96 kilohertz, true high resolution sound.
So let me understand. The technology that WiSA has, the band that you guys are operating on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, when someone becomes a WiSA Association member or a brand partnered in the association, does that mean that all their wireless products from this point forward will be, I guess it's hard to say, but would it be on that wireless signal? Once you partner up, we're developing on this so that way we can confidently say, all of our products in wireless are going to meet the standard and not, definitely not going to be more than that audio latency that we talked about a proper surround sound and still be in sync.
Yeah, it's actually even a little bit more than that. So what that means is, if somebody implements their product according to the specification, and then they go and they have to buy a transmitter module for the transmitter side, if they're developing a transmitter product, or let's say they're a speaker manufacturer, so they have a receiver product, they go and buy a module from a couple different companies. One is Summit, the company that developed this initial technology. And then LG last week also signed up to be a supplier of modules. There's a division of LG called LG Innotek. And they're about a $5 billion division of LG. And they supply modules to both the consumer electronics industry and the automotive industry. So companies would go to one of these companies, buy the module, implement their product according to the specification that they get when they join WiSA. And that means that it's going to be totally interoperable. I can take a product from partner A, from company A and company B. Let's say that's a transmitter from Sharp. That's one of our members. And let's say it's a speaker from Bang & Olufsen or from Klipsch. I know that because it has that WISA logo, it's been through our compliance testing, which is the other part of being a member of the association. Once you develop your product, you submit it, we give it that WISA Good Housekeeping seal of approval that it actually passed all the tests and it's been implemented according to the specification. That guarantees that when I take a transmitter out of the box and I take receivers out of the box, transmitters and speakers, that I turn them on, they know how to pair, and they can see each other and they can communicate back and forth to each other, and volume levels are set and phase levels are set and all those things are done the correct way, and they all just work together in a plug-and-play type environment.
And how long has WISA, the WISA Association, been around for?
So it's been around since 2011. We're now up to 36 different members, people that I'm sure your listeners know quite well, people like Klipsch and Gibson and TIAC and Pioneer and Onkyo and Bang & Olufsen. So a lot of the big companies in the consumer electronics world. As well, there are a lot of startups that are coming into the business, and they see that wireless systems are a new market and something that they think they can make a real dent in. Products are now starting to hit the market. For example, Bang & Olufsen markets this technology in a number of products under the Immaculate Wireless Sound brand name. Klipsch here at the show announced a new series of speakers called Reference Premier. And those Reference Premier speakers are either available as a traditional passive speaker with wires or wireless. Because, again, one of the big changes when you go wireless is that the speakers no longer, of course, have the wire attached to them. That's obvious. But the model changes. The amplification takes place in the speaker. So a speaker becomes now the cabinet, the actual speaker, the acoustics, and a Class D or some type of amplifier, as well as a radio receiver. And so all the amplification takes place locally, which is a lot more efficient than trying to ship things over a wire. So it's much more power efficient.
It becomes more efficient internally housing that stuff inside the speaker?
Inside the speaker, because you don't have all the power loss and everything shipping it over a 30-foot piece of wire.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Right.
Now, let's see. I'm trying to find some of the brands. I mean, I see some stuff here, and you mentioned, you know, Klipsch and things like that, Bang & Olufsen. Uh-huh. In terms of receivers, I think there was also, who was that?
Pioneer, Onkyo.
Yeah, Anthem, I think, was one of them as well.
Anthem is in there. We just had another new member, a company called Gold Peak. And Gold Peak Electronics is the manufacturer of speakers from KEF. So,
oh, nice.
So that's another one. Let me look at the list here.
You also have, it looks like...
Paradigm.
Paradigm, Martin Logan.
Right. Monitor.
Monitor as well. Yeah, there's some pretty high-end companies in terms of wireless. And I did, right. just before I hopped on the show, I kind of threw some questions out, you know, in terms of wireless audio and speaker technology, what comes to mind. And most people who aren't in the industry, my friends, just say, you know, things like, oh, the Denon Heos, you know, the D&M Holdings Heos, Sonos, things like that. But that's
right.
A whole different, like you said, stereo versus surround when we talk about, you know, high quality.
It's confusing from a consumer point of view. I feel sorry for consumers sometimes, but they'll walk into an audio store or a big box store, depending on you know what price range they're looking for. But there's really three different types of wireless systems that you're finding in the marketplace. One is a Bluetooth system, and that's sort of for personal music. You know, take it to the beach and listen on your iPad and pipe music over. You know, it's a single 2-channel stream. And there aren't any timing dependencies. So if I press the play button, if it takes half a second, if you're a half second behind when that audio leaves your iPad and gets played on the device, it doesn't make any difference. And they sound okay for sitting out on the patio. Sort of the next level up from that are Wi-Fi systems. And those are the Sonos, the Heos, all of those types of things. And those are, I'll call those for casual music listening.
Okay.
Music around the house. You can have multiple 2-channel streams, but again, other than trying to make sure that if you're playing the same music in the kitchen and in the living room, that the one isn't half a second behind the other one, then it sounds like reverb. there really aren't any real critical timing dependencies. But again, it's Wi-Fi, and because it's Wi-Fi, you have to take into account the fact that there isn't a whole lot of bandwidth available, because things like baby monitors and microwave ovens are, and all your neighbors are also on Wi-Fi. And so you typically have to put a bunch of memory in the end node, send the data in a compressed format, decompress it, and buffer it up so that if you get a packet hit on TCP/IP, that you don't lose, and it has to retransmit the packet, you don't get a pop or a click when you're listening to the music because you've dropped a packet. So they have a bunch of memory out there. It's sent in a compressed format. And again, there are not a lot of critical timing dependencies. In a home theater environment, you don't have that luxury. So it's real-time audio. You can't send it compressed. It has to go uncompressed. You can't send two-channel. You have to send up to 8 channels. And there's this critical timing dependency to stay in sync with the video.
Now, you brought up a good point, is compressed and uncompressed audio. In terms of wireless, what type of data loss are we talking about, or what type of compression, if any, when sending a wireless signal like that?
For us, it's totally uncompressed. It's raw audio. They're the raw audio packets. Whatever is being produced off the Blu-ray and would normally go out of an analog port on an AVR gets turned into a digital signal, packetized, and sent to the speaker on the other end. And so there's absolutely no compression, and it's not lossless. Whatever's coming off the Blu-ray goes to the speaker.
A WISA is certified member, as long as their products comply with your technology, It is an uncompressed form of audio, and we're just talking about timing now.
That's right.
Is something like that, like, you know, you mentioned Blu-ray player as the source. Is that currently kind of the only type of product that's currently sending out audio? I mean, aside, you know, like the receivers and such.
People are doing it a number of ways. So there are a number of AVR devices under development, and they're going to be sending it out. But the AVR market is really changing, because the AVR, instead of having the amplifier inside of it and connections for wires on the back, becomes more of an audio hub. It does some of the Dolby and DTS or whatever kind of noise reduction or whatever kind of massaging you're doing to the data. And then it sends it, it's still in the digital form, gets packetized, and gets sent out to the speaker. And the speaker takes care of actually doing the digital to analog conversion and playing the music out this analog device, which is the speaker. But it could be an audio hub that used to be an AVR. We're seeing a lot of interest from television manufacturers, because this little transmitter is relatively inexpensive and physically very small. TV manufacturers, now that they're doing things like 4K TVs that have phenomenal pictures, but pretty much terrible sound because they're so thin, you can't get a decent speaker in them. They want to bury the transmitter in here and then be able to do home theater, 5.1, 7.1 type systems, using the television as the primary audio hub in the home. So that's another implementation. Other people are doing just dedicated audio hubs. So it'll be implemented a number of different ways.
Okay, I'm going to come right back to that, because I have another question. It's kind of just, I would just be like feeding a source through like an AVR or something. But again, as always, I'd like to thank my sponsor, Ingram Micro. As I mentioned previously, they are the world's largest technology distributor, delivering flexible multi-channel supply chain solutions and more. If you head over to ingrammicro.com, you can check out some of the products you may already be using. And if you listen to my other shows, like I mentioned, some of them are already been on the show, AV Insider. As I mentioned, Tom, the feeding. Okay, so we're talking about timing and uncompressed audio across a wireless signal.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get into distance, but the other thing I want to talk about is if I have a bunch of FLAC files or some DSD files on a NAS drive or something, some uncompressed audio,
sure,
of sorts, and I'm just feeding that right into my Anthem AVR, or sending that wirelessly over to the speaker.
Mm-hmm.
That's still uncompressed, and it's just, again, it's all about timing or something.
Whatever bits came out of your FLAC file,
mm-hmm,
get transmitted. So it's the only difference is, let's say today you were using an older Anthem AVR,
mm-hmm,
And the AVR has a digital to analog converter in it.
Okay.
Because it's taking that digital file, the FLAC file, and converting it from FLAC into voltage levels that eventually get sent over a wire to a speaker. In sort of the new world, it's going to come off that FLAC. It's going to be, you know, ones and zeros. It's going to go into a new generation AVR, and that AVR is going to keep it in a digital format. It will send it through to this transmitter board. The transmitter board will packetize this information and send it to the proper channel. And it could be that it's 2.0 information. It could be 5.1 information. You have 8 channels maximum. And then the speaker receives it as a digital signal, goes into a Class D amplifier. Then it goes through an analog or a digital to analog converter and then goes out to the speaker. So the conversion now from the digital domain to the analog domain is taking place in an actively amplified speaker as opposed to the AVR.
Okay. Let me ask you this, because and you brought it up, and one of the same questions, and you said it before I could. Like I mentioned, I put out general questions to my communities, and one of the first things, aside from you know, a couple, you know, stereo wireless systems and like Sonos and such. The other main major one, aside from my non-industry friends, were confusion. So things like what type of distance capabilities or limitations, I should say, is there currently with this type of technology?
Sure. So, and that's a good question, because it also depends on what kind of house you live in.
Right. Okay.
So one of the things that we've just done is we've leased a 3,000 square foot house in Beaverton, Oregon, and we've instrumented it. Now, I think the neighbors are a little concerned, because a car full of engineers pull up every morning and they go and run all these tests, and at night they leave. But they're pretty quiet neighbors, and they're not around on the weekends. But and I've told them to name their SSIDs on their Wi-Fi, like FBI surveillance unit number 4. But we'll see if that disturbs the neighbors or not. But anyway, so one of the things that we're doing is we've instrumented this whole house, and we're determining what are the impacts of architectural design on Wi-Fi, high-resolution audio wireless transmission. And in a typical American house, distance is not an issue. We have there are different types of modules you can buy. One of them is an extended distance module, and you can send audio all around a typical 3,000 square foot house without a problem. Now, it's a different story if you live in Europe, or if you live in an urban environment in the U.S. where you have concrete walls. And in fact, even the frequency at which you transmit the data impacts the penetration through things like concrete. So, you know, one of the good things about 2.4 gigahertz, a frequency we don't use, is that it does go through things like concrete better than the 5 gigahertz signal. And that's true for Wi-Fi as well as the WiSA signal. But let's say a typical concrete wall in a condominium in downtown New York is probably about 10 centimeters. And we're able to transmit through about 2 walls before the signal starts to peter out. And so a lot of it is dependent on what type of environment your home is in and what kind of installation you have. One of the nice things about this technology is that you can, from a manufacturer's point of view, they can design a system. Now, you have 8 channels to play with, but you can design a system that says, I'm going to give the consumer a 5.1 home theater system that uses 6 of the 8 channels. I have 2 channels left over. And I'm going to make a product that can then route those 2 channels elsewhere in the home. So sort of like a Sonos type or a Heos type kind of system with those 2 channels. So a multi-room system. And in fact, I can have 7 zones of up to 32 speakers. Then the transmitter that's in the TV or in the smart hub or whatever it happens to be doesn't care what it's sending out over those 8 channels. So I can be using 6 of them for a home theater. Somebody can be watching a movie. And at the same time, somebody out on the patio can be listening to another feed, Spotify or Pandora or something like that. But again, the distance is going to depend on the home construction. in a typical U.S. home, not a problem, pretty much covering a typical 3,000 square foot home. But in a concrete environment, you're going to be able to go a couple rooms.
Okay, but so, and then maybe I didn't catch this part right, but did you say that the max, though, channel wise is eight channel?
Eight channels. So you can do a 7.1 type system.
Okay.
But again, you can cut up those, the manufacturer, when they design their product, will be able to cut up those channels any way they want. So they can say, I'll give the consumer a 5.1 system. So the five regular speakers plus a subwoofer, so it uses six channels. And that leaves me two additional channels left over.
Now,
I can dedicate those two remaining channels for multi-room audio. In fact, I can ship it to seven different zones throughout the house, up to 32 speakers.
Let me ask you this. Now, so 7.1, or like I said, 8-channel, that is the current limitation. But let me ask you this. With things like Dolby Atmos, RO3D, and this new technology, I think that
DTS
is now combating or trying to compete with, I guess, you know, or they're making their own. Can we expect that to branch into that, so that to support that in a wireless format?
Yeah. In the shorter term, I think you'll see a combination of wired and wireless. And so you'll be able to have several Atmos speakers. And Atmos is a phenomenal sound. When I went to Cedia, the line was around the block from their booth to hear it because the sound was so amazing.
Luckily, Dolby's only an hour drive from me.
But the sort of the bad news is that from an interior design point of view, it just upped the number of cables that you have to run under carpets and along the walls and those kinds of things. Because let's say you had a speaker that integrated both a horizontally firing speaker, normal speaker, let's say a rear surround, as well as an up-firing speaker for Dolby Atmos. You have to run two sets of cables to that guy.
Right.
And so it's a mess. And so what we think will happen, especially in the shorter term with eight channels, is that the front channels, usually they're typically close to the AVR or whatever is producing the audio signal. So those guys will be wired, and then the wireless will be used for the rear speakers or the ceiling speakers or the up-firing speakers so that it stops the problem with all the cables.
Okay, and that's good to know, because that's going to be another thing which I'll have Dolby on shortly. But what I also want to know in terms of confusion and questions I got was with wireless audio, what, if any, are problems that may interfere with this wireless signal or may cause, just something not to work?
Right. We actually don't have any real problems with that because, again, we're using those frequencies that are in between in addition to the 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi signals, those four channels at the low end, five channels at the high end. We have those 15 channels that aren't being used by anything else. And those are available around the world. So it's public spectrum.
So all I'm going to need from you is your personal phone number, so when something doesn't go wrong, I can call
you. That's fine. Feel free to give me a call. It's on the website.
Okay.
And it was interesting. And the way we really proved this was, in fact, at Cedia this year.
Okay.
There were probably 60 or 70 Wi-Fi networks up at Cedia. Hardly any of them working.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet not one of them worked, though.
Yeah. And if you went around to all of the Wi-Fi-based products, they were sort of cheating. If you ask any of them, they were running wires to their speakers because they just did not get any wireless bandwidth.
Yeah.
We had six systems up and running. And because we were, and some of our members, people like Bang & Olufsen, they had their systems up and running, all running in this environment. But because we were able to frequency hop to these 15 frequencies that are not used by Wi-Fi, that are really only used by two things, weather radar and military radar, and those are very infrequently used, and even if they are being used, they're only using one or two channels, and you map those channels out. So those frequencies are pretty much untouched and unused, and that's where we get our, in a 7.1 system, about 31 megabits worth of bandwidth in order to ship 7.1 audio around the house.
Now, how does the Weiss Association approach brands to hop on board with this technology, or do the brands come to you guys and say, look, we want to we want to start using this technology to avoid these issues we've had in the past or things like that.
It's really a combination. I'm the United Airlines poster boy. And in fact, in the last 6 months, I've flown well over 100,000 miles going around and visiting not only current members, but prospective members to fill them in on the technology and really do sort of a marketing campaign to potential members. And it's really, people like LG will be doing this. Summit Semiconductor goes off and, you know, they're trying to sell modules into the market. But I'm looking at things more from a Switzerland point of view. I really don't care if they're buying modules from Company A or Company B or Company C. What I'm doing is I'm going around to major speaker manufacturers, major AVR people, and TV manufacturers, telling them about the technology, filling them in, acting as a matchmaker between transmitter people and receiver people, getting them together and getting them on board to the standard.
And another question about partnering with people like that.
And it's inexpensive for companies to do it, so it's not a major financial hurdle to join. And unlike other audio standards, there's not a royalty associated with implementing WiSA-based systems. So once all they do is really buy the modules, include them inside their transmitter or receiver product, and then to actually join the association is just a few thousand dollars typically.
I should know. I mean, obviously you're at CES currently,
right?
You attend shows. You mentioned Cedia. I mentioned possibly. Do you attend ISE in Europe?
We've attended ISE in the past. We're not going to be there this year. We do a lot of people like FutureSource, which is an industry analyst. They recently did a seminar in London about the future of audio. We would go to that, and anywhere where manufacturers are going to show up. As our organization grows, I think that we're going to have to start focusing also on educating the consumer and making them aware of the differences in different types of wireless technology, both, you know, the Bluetooth type systems, the Wi-Fi type systems, and then the WiSA systems, and educating them as well as educating the sales channel, you know, the people that work at the Magnolias of the world, and letting them know, as well as the AV installer community and those guys, making them aware about the differences, the differentiators, and why you'd want to use one system in one type of location and another type in a WiSA system in a different type of application.
So is there not currently some sort of training for that out there right now, or just not
not yet.
Not regularly?
Not yet. In fact, the products, I'd say, are just starting to roll out. I mean, Klipsch rolled out the product here at the show. B&O has been out for a couple of years. Sharp has a product. Interestingly, there's a startup that announced a product. In fact, I'm sitting next to one here that's in our suite. There's a new startup company called Enclave, and they're announcing a system at about the $1,000 price point. That's an entire 5.1 system plus transmitter. Wow. So what's interesting is you're going to see this technology implemented in something at the $1,000 price point. Sitting next to it is a B&O system that it's about at the $25,000 price point.
But just a little bit more.
Just a little bit more, and I must admit it sounds pretty darn good. But the $1,000 system sounds really good for a $1,000 system. But the interesting thing is that the transmitter and receiver technology and the same transmitter and receiver modules are used in the $1,000 system, so it's cost effective there. It's also used in the $25,000 system, where they're really, really concerned about audio quality.
So, in the next year or so, would I be able to expect some sort of classes or places where I can send people to learn, the general consumer, where they want to learn more about wireless audio and speaker technology, so that they're better educated on that sort of thing?
Probably webinar type things and online training classes and that kind of thing, which is going to be good for the installer market, as well as the people specifying and just educating people, because wireless is a new thing, and it's changing the way that products are being implemented. You know, we're going from passive speakers to active speakers. The role of the AVR changes. The role of the TV is going to change in this industry, and we're going to go through a whole revolution on how audio gets shipped around in the home.
If there are brands out there that are listening currently, what would be the best way that, for them to approach you or the WISA Association if they want to learn more or they want to join?
Then go to the website, which is WISAAssociation.org. And there's a email address, info@WISAAssociation.org. Just send me an email and I'll give you a call.
Okay. And everyone, that is www.WISAAssociation.org. WISAAssociation.org.
Couldn't have been much shorter, right?
It's shorter than my email, I'll say that.
Yeah.
I did that purposely just to make it hard for people to find me. I still get spam somehow.
Right.
Is there anything that you can, anything that you couldn't stress enough about wireless speaker and audio technology that, is good information for anyone to know?
I think, know what you're trying to do and study up on the products because, you know, some cases the Wi-Fi type systems are probably going to be the right solution for you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're trying to do audiophile level sound, high quality, high resolution sound, that's more than two channels. This is the technology to use because it's really the only one out there that's able to do it. And I think it's going to be confusing for the next few years as people figure this out. But it's Weiss's role to go out and try to educate not only the consumers but the installer community and the people specifying systems as well as the sales channel.
Is there a Weiss booth at CES right now?
It's not a booth. We have two suites in the beautiful Venetian Hotel on the 30th floor. If somebody is listening to this and they are at CES, come on by. We're in on the 30th floor, 226, with a beautiful view of McCarran Airport.
226 at the Venetian. You know what?
30th.
Those people in the little canals there that stand there all day as statues freak me out.
Yeah, they do me too.
Not that it's a nice little joint to kind of hang out and pretend That's like right. You're in Italy all day, but... You gotta get tired just standing there, and then they move. I'm like, "Whoa!"
That's right.
One more time, 30th floor at the Venetian, Suite 226. Check out the WISA Association if you want to learn more about wireless standards. Well, I should say the wireless standard in speaker and audio technology for more than two channels of audio in a quality level, not and uncompressed at that matter.
That's right.
Is there any sort of wireless myth that you would like to debunk?
Wireless myth that I'd like to debunk.
Or is there anything out there that you think people have in their heads about wireless audio technology that's wrong?
I think that people will be... Yeah, I think it's that you can run home theater off these Wi-Fi systems.
Okay.
Number one. And that I think that they need to be aware about the... taking a look at open versus closed system and the importance of openness.
Of the standard being open so that way people get on board with a standard that works for the community.
Right. And, you know, the other thing that we've spent a lot of time in defining the specification is ease of use. So what we want to be able to do is to have people buy a product, see that it says WISA on it, know that they're all going to play together because it says WISA, open the box, put the speaker on the floor, plug it in, and it just works. It pairs with the transmitter, and we've tried to make it as easy as possible. In fact, the goal is that from the time you get home to unpack the boxes, get it up and running, and start listening to music is under 30 minutes.
There you go. Easy enough. And it works.
And it works. Just works.
You know what? I think that covers a lot of the stuff that I really wanted to get out there about wireless speakers and audio. And I want to thank you for your time. And maybe further down the year, as we get winding through another year, because it's been going so fast.
Right.
I'd like to have you back on if you have time, or maybe we can coordinate something. Because I'm sure, hopefully by that time, we'll have more classes I can send people to or something, more general information. Everyone, as I mentioned, if you want to learn more, go to WISAAssociation.org. That's the website. If you're a social person like myself, you can head over to their Facebook page. That's going to be facebook.com/WISAAssociation. If Twitter still exists tomorrow, it's going to be at WISAAssociation. They have a blog on Tumblr, so it's WISAAssociation.tumblr.com. And if they want to reach you, you said the best way is just go to the website and info@wisaassociation.org.
And I'll contact them immediately.
That sounds great. And again, if you guys are at CES, seriously, go to the Venetian. Not tonight, because they are closed.
Right.
But tomorrow, check them out. It's at the Venetian, 30th floor, suite 226. Everyone, I'm your host, Johnny of AVE Insider. If you want to reach out to me on Twitter, it's at JMOTA3. My personal email, and you can send me emails if you like, no spam, please, is Johnny, JOHNNYMOTA, the number 3, at gmail.com. That's pretty much it for me. You can Google me on other places, but there's too many to list. So, once again, this has been AV Insider. You just learned about wireless speaker and audio technology. This works. It's uncompressed, and it's there's some stuff out there that the general consumers need to know. I will see you all next time. Seriously, check these guys out at CES, the Venetian, 30th floor, suite 226.